This is the Half Court Press Podcast. I'm John Niatawa, joined by Chris Hetty on a Thursday, the final day in January, which feels like a good moment for us to sort of zoom out a little bit.
Yeah.
The teams that we cover, I cover Creighton, he covers Nebraska, are at a bit of a crossroads, I would say. Maybe that's even just sort of like...
Yeah, no, that's fair.
Understating it.
Yeah. It's like there was a fork. There's a fork in the road for Creighton right now. There was a fork in the road for Nebraska,
well,
and they seem to have decided to have, which way to
but
go. But Creighton is kind of...
That's kind of the conversation that I wanted to have, is sort of what is the path to achieving... To the possible path to achieving the goal that these teams have set out for themselves?
Mm-hmm.
Can they navigate that path successfully,
or is this goose done cooked?
Are they done?
Right.
So kind of like a case for and against each team.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was sort of the idea that we had for this podcast, since we are, again, February is usually where the contenders emerge and prove themselves and the pretenders fade away.
Mm-hmm.
So what are these teams?
Yeah.
Some people have already made up their mind on these teams. I think that, you know, since there are games left, it is fair to... To be fair to those teams, I think we should give them the opportunity to prove themselves. But let's have some fun. Let's kind of gauge where we think these teams are and what they can do. We'll start with Creighton, just because the Jays played last night, recording this on a Thursday. So the Jays lost to St. John's at home, 83-67. Kind of got walloped from the start, really.
Yeah.
I mean, it was close early on, but the Jays never could gain control or build a lead, and then St. John's hit him with a massive run at the end of the first half, hit 5 threes in a row, took a 10-point lead in halftime, and the closest Creighton got after that was 8 points. So,
pretty slick jerseys, though.
They did look nice. You like the baby blues?
I like those.
Uh-huh.
I mean, maybe it's because my high school, we had baby blues,
yeah,
and they were pretty sweet. But I liked those baby blues. Creighton's got some good ones.
Right. So the baby blues on 80s night, it was dollar beer night.
Yeah, it was great.
The Jays were on a 2-game winning streak, and they had practiced really well. They thought everything was sort of in line for them to have success against St. John's, and it didn't happen. And I came away from that game with three takeaways of how you could process it.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's three different ways you could process it. For me, the first one was, well, this Creighton team is still learning. Even though we thought it had learned some lessons in last week against Georgetown and Butler, it had proven some things. But maybe not. Maybe this team is still learning. The process is still ongoing. That's one. I think the other one is it's just a complete anomaly. Like, last week is who this team is going to be over the next month, but this game against St. John's just came out of nowhere. Credit St. John's for being hype and focused and bringing the energy and just needing it, wanting it more. And Creighton had a season low shooting percentage and wasn't able to keep up. So that's two. And then the third one to me, though, is the panic button time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Creighton did improve and it's made the adjustments, and this is the team that it is.
Yeah.
Like it is the team that is flawed in many ways. And so I think that's probably what caught the attention of folks who've watched this team all year and who have kind of, I don't know if made up their minds the right term, but have come to the conclusion that the Jays are just, they are who they are now. And the St. John's game, if you're making a case against the Jays of why they won't make the NCAA tournament or why the rest of the season is going to be as up and down as it's been all year, that you look at the St. John's game and say, well, they still didn't defend.
Yeah.
St. John's shot almost 60% from the floor. There was a stretch in the second half where they were 14 of 16 from the floor. So you can't defend. You know, they're still too reliant on the three-pointer. Creighton's, the threes weren't falling. Creighton missed 13 of 14 from three at one point in the game. And they still lack that go-to difference maker that other teams have had in games like that, where Shamori Ponds was 26, 8, 8, and 6. I mean, just an unreal game. Marcus Howard dropped 53. Phil Booth controlled the game. Josh Perkins, Frick Zagas controlled the game. You got these veteran guards who have been tone setters for their teams, and Creighton doesn't have that.
Mm-hmm.
So those three things not having a go-to guy, not being able to play defense consistently, and too reliant on a three-pointer. That was evident against St. John's, and I think you can make a case for they're not going to fix that.
Yeah.
And then that means the season's going up and down.
It is interesting. So both Nebraska and Creighton have lost 5 of their last 7.
Mm.
But I feel like this Creighton losing 5 of the last 7 feels different than Nebraska's. Like, I feel like Creighton still believes, and there's, and I could be wrong, but I still feel like there is a path out there for them to still finish high in the Big East, right? Like, do I? Doesn't that 5 of 7 feel different than Nebraska?
I think it's because of the arrow of the trajectory of that 5 and 7.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
You know, the 5 and 7 for Creighton, there's a little bit of an uptick at the end of that 5 and 7 stretch, whereas Nebraska, it's going down.
Right.
So that's the reason for optimism for the Jays. Mm-hmm. I think what Creighton displayed against Georgetown and Butler, and at times during the losing streak, lost 4 games in a row, but there were stretches in that losing streak where the Jays found different ways to win. They were really balanced offensively, and you know, they brought this urgency and tenacity defensively, and on the glass and diving for loose balls. You know, that they weren't their focus level and their ability to play with toughness was not. It didn't waver based on circumstance. If they hit shots or didn't hit shots, it didn't matter. They were still playing hard. And that was evident against Georgetown and Butler. And it was a sign of that some of the things that the coaching staff had been talking to and working with these guys over the course of the season, it was a sign that those lessons had been learned. As kind of a subplot to that, as part of that, I mean, Creighton's defensive rebounding percentage is much higher than it was at the start of the season. The coaches are convinced and they insist that they're guarding the ball better, like they're handling dribble drivers better. That wasn't on display Wednesday, but I can see what they're saying, especially against Butler on Friday. That was their best offensive performance of the year against a team that statistically is really efficient offensively. And on the other end of the court, Creighton's sharing the ball more. I mean, their assist rate per field goal makes is up. It was around 50% in the first 11 games. They're at like 60% now. So, like, they're finding ways to create offense for one another. Martin Crumple has been a big weapon for them. But, you know, now there's some depth questions, but some of the guys that they have relied on have seemed to find their footing. Damian Mintz is playing really good basketball. Marcus Segarowski is not playing like a freshman. So that, I think last week against Georgetown and Butler, that's the blueprint. That's the team that Creighton wants to be. It wasn't that against St. John's. So it's up to the Jays to figure out, hey, how quickly can we get back to that?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of what I said earlier, is this game a symptom of some bad habits starting to form? It was interesting after the game because, you know, the Jays got done and they lost, got blown out. But one of the themes from the press conference was that I don't know if the Jays fully understood why it happened. I think a lot of times in their losses, they can come up with the explanations pretty quickly of, okay, this, and this. That's clearly why we lost. And you know what? This, and this, we can clean that up pretty easily with more work on the practice floor, more in-game reps, because it's a young team. They need more experience with one another. But after St. John's, sure, you can look at the shooting percentage, and there were some turnovers, especially in the second half, some live ball turnovers that were really costly, maybe some energy hustle plays that weren't there. But, you know, there was a sense that Creighton wasn't able to match the urgency or the desperation level of St. John's. That just sort of big play persona that you have to have. St. John's, every time that game seemed to teeter a little bit when the crowd started getting into it, largely because of Shamori Pons, their go-to guy, but St. John's always had the response. And they were always sort of the team that seemed stable, whereas Creighton was kind of trying to find itself. But they didn't. The Jays couldn't figure. They were like, "Well, I'm not sure why that was."
Mm-hmm.
Greg McDermott said afterward he thought his team was flat, at least early, in the game, and he's like, "I didn't see that coming." So that to me is a little bit of a concern of you know, does that linger? Or can they figure that out quickly enough? But if they can, sure, the schedule sets up nicely for the Jays. They have matchups against teams that I think they they set up more favorably, I guess, or they can take advantage of some of these matchups going forward. They still have to play Villanova and Marquette on the road, but two against Seton Hall, two against Xavier, two against DePaul. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a real shot, and you get Georgetown and Providence coming to Omaha. There's a real shot for Creighton to make a run. So,
well, their schedule finishes in a favorable way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like the last five games, you can probably take away four. You can probably win four of them. So if you can if you can finish strong, then you go into the Big East tournament feeling pretty good, and that can make a difference in terms of making a run. I also feel like there's no reason for me to believe that Creighton couldn't make a run in the Big East tournament. You know,
it's hard to imagine them beating Villanova or Marquette at this moment, just
but
because
they
of the
need
way
to, probably wouldn't need to play them until the semifinals or the final.
Semifinal. Yeah.
But like, I could see them just getting hot. I could also see them, you know, shooting 25% from three and losing by 25. Right. That's kind of the way Creighton rolls.
Yeah. But, you know, again, it's February. There's plenty of games left. There's an opportunity for a team like Creighton to get hot. The players have always said, coaches have sort of backed this message as well, that February is the month. They knew there were going to be growing pains. There were going to be ebbs and flows to the season. They had a lot of lessons to learn. But by the time they get to February, they were going to be sort of grizzled by those they're going to be battle tested and grizzled, and they're going to learn from the hits that they took.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's their opportunity. Now you got to go win these games, and you got to apply some of the things that you learned and find a way to get it done. Mm-hmm. So we'll see if they can do it. I'm not sure. I'm kind of still on the fence with this group.
Really?
I think a path to the NCAA tournament seems pretty unlikely. It just seems like, I mean, they'd have to finish 7-3 or eight and two.
Yeah,
for a team that hasn't really put together a 2-week stretch of basketball where they've played consistently, they've done it maybe for a week, but not 2 weeks. I mean, they'd have to do that really for a full month to play consistent, solid, at their peak or near their peak basketball. And they just haven't been able to do that yet. So that seems like a lot to ask, but
they don't really have any bad losses.
No, they don't.
But I mean, Butler's not great.
But the losses to the good teams are piling up now.
Yeah. I mean, you need a signature win. I don't know if they really have one.
Mm-mm.
I mean, you can argue they beat Butler after they lost to Butler, but like, that's not. You need something to stand out.
Right.
And as we've said, Clemson, we don't know. So.
I don't know if that counts.
So you almost need to not lose, beat Villanova or Marquette or both.
Right.
To kind of like take away some of your losses and be like, yeah, we're better than our record shows, you know.
And you might get some credit, Damian Jefferson coming back from injury in a couple weeks. If the Jays were to put together a run, you might get some credit from the committee for being a team that is playing at its peak at the end.
Mm-hmm.
They do try to, the committee tries to look at your whole schedule, and they want to assign the same amount of value to a win in March, early March in the conference tournament. That win matters the same as a win or a loss in November, but there would be something to be said for Creighton actually having its team at full strength at the end of the year. And maybe you can justify some of the losses they took mid-January, early February. Damian Jefferson is still 2 or 3 weeks away, though. So I don't know if it'll be up to this team that they have right now. They got to turn the corner before that,
mm-hmm.
before he returns. So we'll see. Not easy for the Jays,
no.
But possible.
Possible, yeah. I mean, possible. I Creighton's not a team I necessarily trust.
You look at the schedule, you see win, win, loss, win, loss, win, loss, win, loss, 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 loss. You know, it's just, they haven't been, they've just sort of rode the wave,
mm-hmm.
which is, I mean, that's typical, I think, of an inexperienced group, but they've got some experience now. I mean, mm-hmm. we're 2/3 of the way through the season. This mm-hmm. is the time, like I said, this is the time for them to really put it together and start playing consistently. They haven't done it yet, but they do have the opportunity now. So they'll play Xavier on Sunday, go to Villanova after that, to Seton Hall, to Xavier.
Big stretch.
It is a big stretch.
Because you get under 500, then it's kind of like, well,
right,
it's over. Mm-hmm. You got to stay above. And they're, I mean, it's getting closer. They're 12 and 9.
Right.
Yeah. Got to stay above.
This is definitely that moment where if you want to visualize it, you're seriously staring at that fort.
Mm-hmm.
You going right or left?
Right.
Right. Is to the NCAA tournament. Left is to the NIT or worse.
Yeah.
And we'll see how the Jays handle it. The question for Nebraska is, have they already passed that fork, and are they already sort of sliding down?
They headed that way, yeah.
Down to the area where they don't want to be. Four in a row now.
Mm-hmm. 5 of 7.
5 of 7.
Oh, maybe it's 6 of 8 at this point. Yeah, it's 6 of 8.
Isaac Copeland obviously tragically suffered that ACL injury,
mm-hmm.
and it's such a disappointment for not only for him, but for the team. He's so important to what they do. I mean, you're around these guys. Do you get a sense that the writing's on the wall for this group? Like, was Wisconsin their last sort of stand in a way? But
there's a lot that rode on that the last two games, I think, because with Isaac Copeland being out, I mean, it's hard to prepare for someone like Wisconsin and not have Isaac Copeland, because of the things that Isaac Copeland does. Like, when you take away Copeland, you become significantly less special, basically, if you're Nebraska. And so they only had 2 days to prepare for Wisconsin and for, like, how to play without Isaac Copeland, which they'd hardly done all year. And so you could tell in the first half, it was very, I mean, that Wisconsin goes up, like, 23-9. And at a certain point, you were like, man, they have no idea what they're doing out there. Just none whatsoever. Like, they don't know how to play without Isaac. Like, yeah. They're used to him being there. And so we obviously saw growing pains there. And then they kind of figured it out in the second half a little bit. I mean, I think Thor coming on gave you some pretty good minutes. I mean, he got 10 rebounds, scored, I think, 3 points maybe on kind of like a garbage time lay-in. The problem is not only do you lose Isaac Copeland and that makes you less special, but they don't really have a good replacement for that because their bench is just unimpressive.
Mm.
You know, they scored six. Since Isaac Copeland gone out, the bench has scored 6 points. You know, and you hate to, like, pile on to these guys because they're college kids, but, like, they're just not playing very well.
Yeah.
Like, Brady Hyman hasn't scored in, like, almost 30 minutes of his last play. Non Ikenton's made 1 3-pointer in the 2019. Amir Harris, you know, is still kind of coming back from getting mono. And you can only ask so much of Tanner Borchardt. Like, Tanner Borchardt played, you know, pretty well, but he's not going to score 10 a game for you. He's probably not going to score 6, maybe 5 and 7 rebounds. Which means that you rely heavier on Isaiah Roby, Glenn Watson, and James Palmer, and they shot 28%. So, like, they're feeling the stress and they're feeling, you know, that they're also in the funk. Like, they were going to be in a funk no matter what, because they were even with Copeland. Now you're in a funk and you have arguably the most valuable player you've had all year gone. And so that's why it almost seems like Nebraska's already, there was kind of a fork in the road for Ohio State and Wisconsin. And then they've kind of been like, well, this isn't working. And they're kind of going down that path of, like, I mean, I don't think they make the tournament anymore. I mean, because I look at their schedule and I see, like, two or three games that they could probably win. Ken Pom has them winning 6 right now. And I think that they'll figure it out without Copeland a little bit more. Like, I didn't expect them to beat Wisconsin because that's hard to do without Copeland. I think that they'll figure out a way to, you know, get Glenn some shots and James Palmer some shots and get Roby going because you'll just have more time to plan. I mean, I think it'll get a little bit aesthetically more pleasing. But, man, it's just hard when you're in a funk and you don't have one of your better players.
Do you get a sense that, like, with Palmer, it feels like his efficiency's dropped a little bit?
Absolutely, yeah.
And I was looking at his numbers, and I think he's actually taken fewer, because I thought he's not shooting it well from three. He must be taking a lot of threes, mm-hmm. and that's dropping the efficiency level. But he's really not. Like, he's not. I think his threes attempts per field goal attempts is actually down in Big Ten play,
mm-hmm.
but his numbers are obviously lower. What have you seen? Is it like, our teams, have they figured out a little bit of how to defend him, how to slow him down? Or is it kind of a byproduct the last two games, at least?
I think it's kind of
not having your floor spacer. I mean, this team, Nebraska was already an up-and-down shooting team, and Copeland was one of their more consistent guys.
Yeah.
And now you take him out of the lineup, suddenly
I feel
teams
like,
can clog the paint a little
bit. Yeah, I feel like teams are like, all right, we're going to guard 15 feet in. Like, go ahead and try and shoot over us. And that's kind of what Wisconsin did, and then Nebraska shot 28%. Mm. And so I think what James, the people have figured out, like, let him shoot. Like, give him some space. Like, if he makes one or two, then we'll bump up on him, and then we're going to have to change some things. But, like, let's see if he can beat us from outside first. And he took some pretty early, quick shots in the first half, the quick threes that I don't know Miles was pumped about. Yeah, he's becoming a little bit more inefficient.
Yeah, because he's still obviously a really good player.
Absolutely.
But for Nebraska to, and again, maybe it's just not possible given the roster makeup, but for Nebraska to pick up some wins in the, over the course of the next couple weeks, they need him to be just a little bit more efficient.
He's got to score like 25. Right? And he's scoring 19 right now, so 25 isn't crazy, but like,
With like fewer shots, maybe more free throw attempts.
Yeah. And it's weird because Nebraska's had some interesting games officiating wise in the last couple of weeks where like they're not getting a ton of calls with contact in the lane. And that's, you know, it's going the other way as well. But other teams are kind of taking more advantage of that. But it's almost like with Palmer, it's almost like he lived at the line so much last year that when he drives in, he expects to, one, get contact, two, get a foul call so he can just go to the line. And I think a lot of refs aren't, I mean, teams are playing really well in terms of just going straight up and kind of keeping him in front of him. I kind of feel for that coaching staff, because like, what do you do?
Because you've got
Glenn Watson, who's clearly one of the Nebraska's better guards in history, is going to be on top of a lot of lists, but he's inconsistent, and he didn't play very well against Wisconsin. James is, you know, you got to get him going. And Roby is, now he's playing the four, but he also still has to play the five. And he tends to try and score more when he's a four than a five. And, like, so he's just got a lot of things going on in his head. And then you got all these really young freshmen that are trying to contribute but aren't playing very well. So everyone's going through a funk, and you've got, you know, controversy with your athletic director, and you've got fans that are yelling at you at home and booing you at home, and like, there's just so
were there boos?
There have been boos the last two home games.
Oh,
yeah.
Man. By the way, Roby versus Wisconsin, he was really good.
He took Ethan Happ for all.
So
he had,
I think about this because of the last 2 years, I've watched players that have gotten drafted, Kyrie Thomas and Justin Patton. Justin Patton had a game at St. John's his redshirt freshman year, which was sort of his coming out party. Kyrie Thomas cemented himself as an NBA draft pick against Villanova. He hit like 5 of 5 from three in the opening minutes and was just like, I'm ready to go. I'm able to hold my ground against these other NBA draft prospects that Villanova had.
Yeah.
That kind of felt like a moment for Roby. If he does indeed jump, like, I think you'll point to that game as like, that was when he sort of made his statement of like, this is what I can be. Take notice, NBA teams.
Yeah.
Like, come consider me as a draft.
I know the Oklahoma City Thunder was there.
Were they?
So yeah. Honestly, it's a good point. It's a really good point, because he was going up toe to toe with Ethan Happ,
who people
are watching anyway.
Exactly.
And like, there was one play in particular where Ethan Happ tried to make some move, and Roby blocked him like he was swatting like Glenn Watson in practice. Like, it was nothing. And then there was a couple plays where, you know, it was pretty early on, he spun away from Ethan Happ on the block and dunked it. And it's like, see? Like, I think part of that for him is probably him looking up at the scouts like, hey, you saw that, right? Okay, cool.
Well, and I think he probably knows that Copeland's not there. Somebody's got to do something. So
I think that's his thing too.
That's probably more the motivation, I doubt.
It's not like I'm going to the NBA, but I think that, like, you know, the whole, does he know how good he is? Like, I'm sure he's probably like, yeah, see, I'm
right.
Like, I know what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And honestly, yeah, I think he has been aggressive all year in a lot, like, probably, well, since the Minnesota game in December, he's been pretty aggressive. He's always the guy, you know, at Rutgers, whenever everyone was taking a snooze, he showed up and he was ready to play. He was aggressive. And so I think that he, more than anyone else on the team, feels this onus of like, all right, Isaac's out. I gotta do more, you know?
All right, let me throw this at you.
Okay.
Tell me what you think. Last year, Creighton got to, let me look at the date. See, January 17th. They were 22nd in KenPom, 15-4 overall. Mm-hmm. Martin Crample gets hurt. He's out for the year.
Yeah.
It kind of feels a little similar to Nebraska. Now, Nebraska is at a little bit different point in the season, but still ranked highly in KenPom, mm-hmm. still has an NC. Like, if everything ended right now, like, if everything ended right when Martin Crample got hurt for Creighton last year, Creighton was an NCAA tournament team, maybe like a six seed.
Mm-hmm.
If everything ended right now for Nebraska, they'd be maybe like a nine seed, but they'd be in the tournament.
Yeah.
If it all ended today.
Exactly today. Yeah, right. Sure.
So I think of, you know, Creighton last year had Khyree Thomas, NBA caliber player, or potential, mm-hmm. you know, draft pick potential. Isaiah Roby for Nebraska, draft pick potential. Marcus Foster for the Jays. James Palmer for Nebraska. Creighton had a little bit more depth. And they also got a guy, they brought a guy out of redshirt to help replace what they lost with Martin Crample, so that's a difference. But it does sort of like, for me, it creates a scenario. Again, I don't know how Nebraska does it,
yeah.
but in my mind, it creates a scenario to where you can recover from it. So Creighton, what's funny about it, I looked at their schedule after Martin Crample went down. They beat one NCAA tournament team the rest of the way.
Hmm.
It was Villanova.
Mm-hmm.
But they finished 6-6. The other five wins were against non-NCAA tournament teams, but they beat one. They lost their first round game in the Big East tournament and still got an 8 seed.
Right.
So I think it's possible. I guess my thought is that it's not as... It may not be as daunting as Nebraska fans think.
Mm-hmm.
It's still pretty daunting.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But like...
There are
teams, and that's the big thing, is that Nebraska has so many opportunities.
Six quad one games in the next
right.
10 games.
But, and the other thing is, like, there are teams that have stitched it together in some odd way that mm-hmm. doesn't make sense in the moment, but
right.
when you look at it at the end, it's like, oh, 19-13,
mm-hmm.
and they got in as an 11, you know? Like,
yeah. Yeah, no, you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
I don't know what the path is there.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know if that means that Roby's got to just play like a monster and Palmer's got to be, like we said, kind of a little bit more efficient. And Glenn Watson is just like this, like, spark plug who's mm-hmm. moving everywhere and taking opposing point guards out of what they want to do and
mm-hmm.
controlling the pace of the game. Man, the margin for error is very slim, but. I look at what Creighton did last year. I look across the college basketball landscape over the last couple of years and teams that have taken what you would think are catastrophic injuries and still found a way to salvage it to a point. They're never the same team.
Sure.
You're never as good as you were or as good as you could have been.
Yeah.
When you lose a critical piece like Copeland, but you might be able to use the pieces you have left to kind of like. Make it
salvage
work.
Something. Yeah.
yeah.
I mean, two thoughts on that. One, it's a good point. The thing I think of is it's not just that Copeland got hurt. It's that they were going through something even before he got hurt.
Yeah. I think that's a good point because
if Copeland was here, even if Copeland was playing, I'm still not sure they beat Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and it's not the game would have been different, but like they're in such a weird headspace. And so it's just like something that really exacerbated the problem was Copeland getting hurt. But at the same time, you can still somewhat see a scenario in which, you know, Thomas Allen starts hitting shots because that has to start happening. You need more from Thomas Allen, Nana Kenton, and James Palmer in these next 10 games. You absolutely have to. And you have to start hitting shots. You have to start hitting threes. And that was Nebraska's bread and butter. Like, that's how they killed teams early in the season. They just took away their... That's how they took away their momentum. It's Thomas Allen hitting threes late, you know?
Right.
And that's kind of gone away. And so you need to start hitting shots. You need to, I mean, like, you can see a scenario where, you know, Nonakinson starts going, Thomas starts going, James Palmer finishes his career really strong, and all these things happen, and they finish, yeah, they scrap together 19-3, and maybe they beat, you know, Purdue.
19-13,
and they beat Purdue, and they, like, beat Iowa to end the season to get that 19th win, and they go into the conference tournament season a 9 seed or an 8 seed, like, ready to whatever.
Yeah, because, like, in that scenario, they'd be 5-5 down the stretch.
Yeah.
Beating Illinois, Northwestern, Penn State, and then you have to beat somebody,
yeah,
a
like
couple teams
Iowa,
that are good.
Yeah
like Iowa, Minnesota, or Purdue or something in that range. And then, like you said, probably get a win in the Big
Ten. Probably need one or two, yeah.
Because you're the Big Ten record, if they go 5-5 the rest of the way, they'd still be under 500
in
the
league. 12, yeah.
I think that they probably need two. One or two in the Big Ten tournament.
For sure they do. To get to the NCAA tournament?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You could get in the NCAA tournament with a losing record in conference play, but at 8-12, it feels like...
Yeah, I mean, and I think that in that circumstance, they would take into account... I think the committee would take into account the Copeland injury.
And they probably get dinged for that a little bit.
Yeah, they would. Mm-hmm. But if, like, say Nebraska goes to Purdue and wins, or Michigan, or Michigan State... Like, those are games where I think the committee would be like, oh, okay, even without Copeland, they're pretty good.
Yeah.
You know? And so, but it's going to be the same thing as last year, I think, where, like, they go to the tournament. I said at the beginning of the year that this team's going to be good enough, but they're going to go to the Big Ten tournament, and they're going to need a win or two to get
that's
in.
About where they're
that's
at.
Exactly. And that's pretty much where they're at, but in different circumstances.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's where they could be at, because they also could...
Here's the other weird thing, though.
...lose a lot down the stretch.
That's like their ceiling now. I feel like 19 wins is their ceiling.
Yeah.
And that's if they play exceptionally well.
Yeah.
I mean, they're at 13 right now. Honestly, I think if they get 16 or 17, that's going to be a lot more doable than 19. 19, you have to do some things where James just has like 35.
Right.
You know,
the two teams we cover, their ceilings are the NCAA bubble.
Right.
Like the best case scenario, realistic scenario for both teams, is to sneak on the bubble and maybe get in.
That's
disappointing, obviously, just because of what what Creighton showed in the non-conference. Even though it didn't necessarily beat the top tier teams on its schedule, it competed with them and got the win over Clemson. So there was it looked like an NCAA tournament team when it was playing Gonzaga close.
Mm-hmm.
And Nebraska, obviously, we know what they had accomplished in the non-conference, but reality has set in January, and it's kind of a harsh one.
Yeah, the goal is no longer, I mean, it's still the goal, but the realistic scenario, if you're Nebraska or Creighton, is to be sitting in the meeting room with a camera on you on Selection Sunday.
Yeah.
So that you are interesting enough to the committee and everyone else that there's a possibility
that you can get in
and they can show you like celebrating, but at least just giving yourself that chance. That's the ceiling.
But even for both of the teams, like, to get there, it seems
it's pretty steep.
Yeah. Like a lot, but possible.
Tim Miles is theoretically correct. You got 10 games left there. You can always make a run. The difference is, though, is like you're trying to make a run, but you don't have any shoes on and you're running on like gravel. Theoretically you can, but it's really hard.
Uphill. In a snowstorm.
And it's, yeah. Yeah. And you're barefoot. Did I say you're barefoot?
Yeah, you did. No shoes. All right. Nebraska plays Illinois on Saturday.
Yeah.
Creighton plays Xavier on Sunday. Must win games for both teams.
Yeah. You lose to Illinois. Yeah, it's...
Right.
I mean, it's already pretty... And I keep saying... I feel like I keep saying that, like, oh, you lose to Ohio State, it's over. Oh, you lose to Wisconsin, it's... But, like, you lose on the road to Illinois. And Illinois is, like, scary because they're 6-14, but they just beat Maryland.
Did they beat Maryland?
They just beat Maryland.
I know they beat... Oh, yeah, they won in the Garden.
Yeah.
Yeah, they beat Maryland in the Garden.
Which,
and then
they that doesn't make any sense.
Dropped Minnesota... handily. They lost.
They crushed
Minnesota at home.
So this Illinois team, they've got 6 wins, but they still like took Gonzaga to the brink. They took Nebraska to the brink earlier this year.
Yeah.
And so they're not good, but like theoretically they're 6-14, but they're good enough.
Right.
Brad Underwood, you never know. And they lost to, honestly, they, I mean, Nebraska lost to Illinois last year, and that's kind of what cut their NCAA tournament dreams. Right. So this could be the same thing.
I mean, again, like I said off the top, it kind of feels like both teams are sort of trending in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
But to be fair to them and the players and the coaches who are going out there competing to try to win games, they still have a month left.
Absolutely.
We owe them the opportunity to see what they can do.
Yeah.
And so we'll keep talking about it.
Yeah.
We'll keep following it. We'll keep bringing you the coverage of these two teams. And we'll see what they do. If they played today, Nebraska and Creighton,
man,
who would you pick?
I don't know.
I think I'd still take Nebraska only because in that game, Copeland didn't do
a ton.
He
really didn't do a ton.
Right?
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right.
Even though Nebraska is a totally different team today.
Yeah.
I
probably take Nebraska at PBA. Nearly anywhere else in the world, I think I'd take Creighton by like two or three.
Right. Fair enough.
You know?
Yeah.
But it's getting the gap has slowly.
Yeah, it's definitely.
They're about, I mean, I don't know. And that's the thing where like both of these teams have the potential to make a run in these next 10 games, but both of them I don't trust. So I have no idea what they're going to do.
Right. Beauty of college basketball is you get the opportunity to prove it. So these guys will have the chance to do it. And we'll be back, I believe, next week to break it all down and see where they stand after that. Chris, thanks for your time, man.
Yep.
Good pod. Thanks for listening.